It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome into the RotoWire Fantasy Football Pod. Nick Whalen, Joe Bartle here with you, as we will be every week throughout the NFL offseason. Joe, we just fired up our first, kind of full offseason pod schedule last week, and we had a lot to talk about a week ago. We have somehow significantly more to talk about this Wednesday. This NFL, legal tampering, free agency period, whatever you want to call it, this is starting to feel like the NBA trade deadline to me.
Oh, I was going to say, it feels like NBA offseason, the first day of the legal tampering period. And you do a lot of NBA coverage. So I thought, as somebody that kind of watched it passively from the side, this was the most exciting, really 36-hour period, Monday into Tuesday afternoon. We had some breaking news on Tuesday as well. Fantasy-wise, certainly with the shuffling of running backs, I was shocked and I tweeted out on Monday. I did not have my bingo card running backs getting significant money after last season. We saw in the offseason with the Kareem Hunts of the world and Ezekiel Elliott waiting to get the deals they did. That was impressive to me. Now, I think the ripple effects is the wide receiver market. It felt very clear that the teams that wanted running backs, those were the first dominoes to fall. But you still have the Kelvin Ridley domino. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. You, as a Jags fan, I'm very curious to hear what your opinion is. But that secondary market, and now that Mike Williams was released today by the Chargers, adding to that, I think will be the next one of interest for a lot of folks.
Yeah, I mean, so much has happened in the last 36, 48 hours. We'll try to focus more on what's broken, today and even late yesterday. You mentioned Mike Williams. That was a big one. Not shocking necessarily, as the Chargers, kind of move into what could be, a soft reboot on the fly with a new coach in place, trying to reset that roster alongside Justin Herbert. Not surprised at all to see Austin Ekeler out the door earlier this week. We'll talk about that landing spot and what he may or may not have left in the tank for what's like an all-time depressing fit with the Washington Commanders. But everybody loves Mike Williams, right? Well, we'll start there. Everyone loves Mike Williams, the player. It's how many games are you going to get out of Mike Williams every season? And I think, the cap number was probably the number one reason that the Chargers ended up letting him go. But the lack of dependability year in and year out, I think, is a factor here as well. So how much interest do you think he generates in what's ultimately a pretty sparse group of available wide receivers? And, a few hours from now, Calvin Ridley could also be off the market.
Yeah, the visual audience got to see me make a face when you said everyone loves Mike Williams. I do not. I have been following the Chargers now. I do the Chargers notes for RotoWire 7 years at this point. Man, it's been a long time. So I'm very familiar. I mean, for the entirety of Mike Williams' career, I've been covering him to a level that probably a few others have for RotoWire. And I completely disagree. I think the reliability is one point. He has played all 16 games just twice in his 7-year career. Of course, that coincided with kind of like the Nick Perry level of the Packers, where his contract year was easily his best year of his career in 2021. Joe Lombardi was the offensive coordinator, and that point was turning him into Michael Thomas from the Saints yesteryears. And I think that's the selling point if you are signing Mike Williams to a bigger deal, and that's going to be the key for me. So we've seen Gabe Davis get somewhere around $11 or $12 million, a little bit more than that. Darnell Mooney got similar money from the Falcons dating back to last year. Alan Lazard, a similar type of deal for the Jets. I would assume Mike Williams makes more than that on the open market. You look at all the teams that could use receivers and factor in Mike Williams will not count against the compensatory pick format. There's going to be enough suitors that are interested in Mike Williams. But what are you wanting to get out of Mike Williams? We're talking about from a fantasy perspective, but also if you are a team saying I'm going to pay more than $12 million a year for wide receiver, what does that project like? Well, Michael Pittman got the franchise tag and then the extension from the Colts at $25 million a year as their 1A. I think we didn't talk about last week, I kind of was interested in the concept if the Colts were to trade Pittman for even an early second round pick. This draft class, you might be able to replace Michael Pittman's production and not have to pay that premium. The Colts ended up doing so. I think Michael Pittman and Mike Williams is a lesser player than Pittman by every regard, at least in my mind. Maybe it's different to you, Nick. And if Mike Williams is your wide receiver 2 in this market, that might be close to $20 million a year. I would just make it a smaller deal if possible, less guaranteed money if possible, because I don't think Mike Williams does play the whole time. Like, if I'm trying to sign Mike Williams to what he'll likely get in the free agent market in the $18-20 million range, you need him to be healthy, and he hasn't done that throughout his entire career. So I'm hoping he is the Joe Lombardi 2.0 for whatever team signs him, but he has to stay healthy to do so. And I don't know if that does happen. So this is going to be one of the cautionary tales. I would assume, and I wrote this on our doc, like the Dolphins or Bills or somebody of that ilk who is going to get a lot of compensatory picks at right now would be interested in him. The Broncos could. That would be the Joe Lombardi reunion, especially if they trade Jerry Jeudy away this offseason. But the Bears have been cautiously, I guess I'd say curiously, not spending a lot of their free agent money, haven't made a lot of big moves outside of DeAndre Swift from an offense perspective. And if you want to build around Caleb Williams, that's such an easy narrative. When we signed Mike Williams, he's going to be great alongside DJ Moore. That I wouldn't be surprised if that's a choice that the Bears front office goes to.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I think all those teams to me would make sense as landing spots for Mike Williams. Like Dolphins, for some reason, that just seems like a Dolphin signing. And like you said, Chicago, yeah, they've made their splashes here and there. But you know, right now, who's their number two receiver? Is it Tyler Scott? Is it Velus Jones? I mean, they have an obvious need there. Perhaps they will fill that, you know, in the NFL draft. But I think that is something that they would consider. I mean, they're a team that, despite feeling overwhelmingly likely that they're going to take a quarterback and kind of continue this unintentional rebuild that they've been under for like the last 10 years. Right. Some of the things that they've done, I think, indicate that they don't want this to be a total teardown, right? I think they want to still be, you know, a team that's not, you know, just okay with winning two games next year because, oh, we got our quarterback in place. You know, I think they're trying to kind of thread this needle of being both competitive and developmental at the same time. You know, comparing Michael Pittman to Mike Williams, I too would rather have Pittman. You know, at cost, it becomes more of a debate, you know, because I think he's kind of right on that line of like, all right, if he's your number one receiver, how great do you feel? If he's your number two, you feel great about it. The big difference between those guys is Michael Pittman turns 27 in October and Mike Williams turns 30 in October. And Mike Williams is coming off of a major injury. He's had multiple major injuries throughout his career. I still think he has productive years left in him, but it's just, if you're bringing him in to be your number one or even number two guy, and you have designs of doing more than, you know, just being a fringe playoff team, I think that's just a huge risk to take. So, you know, one team that you didn't mention as a potential landing spot for him, and I'm just throwing this out there to see what you think. We all expect the Kansas City Chiefs to do something at receiver. Right. Is that a risk they would take? Is the reward worth it for a 30-year-old Mike Williams?
Yeah, and I mentioned Hunter Renfrow as a landing spot too. He was released a little bit earlier on Wednesday. He joins kind of the secondary tier of receivers. We'll get to Mooney and Deontay Johnson a little bit later in the show. I think Hunter Renfrow would make a lot more sense than Mike Williams, for example. I think they already have a better version of Mike Williams in a pass catcher and a younger player who they drafted in the second round last year. So there's no reason I think the Chiefs, other than, haha, let's taunt our division rival. But if you're the Chiefs, do you really have a division rival? You've been dominating the division now for a decade. I think the Raiders and Chargers and Broncos are all looking up and saying, oh, I would love to even compete with it. I know the Raiders kind of beat the Chiefs a few times in the regular season. That's the regular season. Talk to me when you've done anything in the postseason, Las Vegas and Oakland fans in that regard. So no, I don't know about that Mike Williams landing spot. A lot of people, and this is, I figured what we do next week, because the free agent waiver wire should be less active. The Justin Jefferson conversation, he hasn't reportedly put out a trade offer yet, but was very, very vocal about what happens with Kirk Cousins will decide my future with the Vikings. And Jefferson's looking at getting easily the most wide receiver money that we've ever seen in the NFL. The Chiefs shouldn't do that. But if you were, that's like Kevin Durant going to the Warriors kind of level. Like if you really want to be obscenely gross in terms of making the NFL not competitive, Jefferson to the Chiefs and kind of a reverse of that Tyreek Hill deal a couple of years ago makes infinitely more sense. And I think Jefferson would ask for maybe 15 more a year, 20 more a year than Williams. And I would gladly do that because I don't know, maybe I'm just way lower on Mike Williams relative to the general public, but that's a consistent factor in Jefferson than I would say to Mike Williams.
You're right that it would be very un-Chiefs to do, right? If in fact, we've seen them do the opposite already with Tyreek Hill, but man, I would love to see it. I think there's motivation to get this offense back on track, right? I think they've now shown that they can win Super Bowls in different ways, right? You could do it with defense. You could kind of take more of the New England model. You could do it with offense, as we saw a few years ago. And I think they need to start planning ahead, right? Like even you know, the Travis Kelce piece, it's like, look like you have a big hit in Rashee Rice going forward. I think that's going to be huge, but it can't just be Rashee Rice. And this is always a team that's been forward thinking. So that would not be great for the league. It'd be super fun.
That's what I'm saying. It's Kevin Durant Warriors.
Yeah. As somebody who roots for an AFC team, I wouldn't love that necessarily, but all right, let's talk a little Deontay Johnson here. And then I really want to get your thoughts on what the Green Bay Packers have done this week, but we got to talk Deontay Johnson. You know, being traded to the Panthers right now is like, oh boy, that's like winding up on the Washington Wizards or the Detroit Pistons. There's just like a, you know, kind of a stink on you when it comes to fantasy, when it comes to real life. Carolina has allocated a lot of its resources this offseason toward the offensive line. I think they've done what they need to do in that regard, just trying to give Bryce Young a more stable environment. What does this mean for Deontay Johnson? You could kind of talk about it as far as how it reflects on what, you know, is now going on in Pittsburgh, what he would have been in that offense with Russell Wilson. And obviously, you know, tie that into what we expect from Bryce Young in year two.
Yeah. We talked about last week, where was Russell Wilson going to land up? Steelers was one of my top options, I think, right with the Falcons. So that was no surprise. We can talk about the Steelers offense in a second, but the Panthers invested $150 million in two guards in the first 24 hours of the legal tampering period for NFL free agency. And that's the correct choice. Like you can't undo the trade and ultimately giving up a number one overall pick again the following year for Bryce Young when you had CJ Stroud there. Like that has already happened. The sunk cost fallacy, we saw that with the Cardinals a couple of years ago with that Kyler Murray trade. Like you've already whiffed on Josh Rosen on that pick. Let's go do the next best thing. And in this case, I think signing the guards and try to improve the offensive line is the right call. Would I be personally investing $150 million into two guards that I don't think are quite of the upper echelon in the NFL? No. But that's what you have to do when your team is as bad as the Panthers are. No real way to improve it from a draft perspective. The Deontay Johnson trade is, well, like everyone says with Russell Wilson, there's no downside to it. It's a $1.3 million contract for a starting quarterback. That doesn't hurt you. But I've seen the other case be made, and I think it was Ben Solik or somebody else among the fantasy community. It doesn't raise the ceiling too much, and I would go along that same line for Deontay Johnson. I think it's essentially a one-year, $10 million or $12 million contract. They could release him or he'll be an unrestricted free agent next year. So if things don't work out for Deontay Johnson in Carolina, and they probably won't, it's fine. It doesn't hurt you at all. You're giving resources to your young quarterback, both offensive line now and wide receiver. It's a cheap enough deal relative to his production. You look at what Deontay Johnson did last year. I guess I have never been in on Deontay Johnson, even in full-point PPR leagues. It's like, nah, I want somebody that has a ceiling, and there is no ceiling with Johnson, especially post-Ben Roethlisberger. But 51 catches, 717 yards, and five touchdowns in 13 games really isn't bad. Like if you're saying Johnson will do at minimum that for the Panthers next season, and you can get him probably for a sixth or seventh round pick, fine. I'm really curious to see how Thielen ends up operating opposite Johnson. Right. That was like the lone bright spot for the Panthers offense. But we saw Thielen dramatically tail off towards the latter half of the year. I don't know if that's Bryce Young's play, probably, or if teams keying in on Thielen a little bit more, maybe that too. But Johnson is the better of those two slot receivers and would, if you're saying one-to-one, Johnson's going to operate in the same capacity as Thielen. He is going to be better. Like by default, he will be better. So while it's one of those, don't really care for it moves, from a fantasy perspective, that might be the James Conner of this year, where you're shrug your shoulders, taking the sixth round, and you're going to get value regardless because he's in a bad offense and in a good role, even in that bad offense.
I think, of course, a lot of it depends on what you think of Bryce Young. Do you think he's broken? Do you think he's irreparably damaged by what the Carolina Panthers put him through last year? If so, probably stay away. If not, and I'm still giving him a leash here. I don't think many quarterbacks, you know, would have been able to step in and succeed in that situation. I think this actually becomes relatively appealing because I think some people are going to get sucked into the Adam Thielen trap and say, well, look what he did last year. You know, he was one of the, especially first half of the season, one of the better ROI players in all of fantasy football, not just receivers. I don't think that's happening again. I'm fading Adam Thielen next season. I think he's just at that point in his career. And, you know, Carolina, you look at, you know, just very basic numbers. Like, they were dead last in passing yards last season.
Right.
They were 13th in pass attempts. You know, it's like this team was throwing the ball.
Yeah.
There were a lot of three and outs involved in that offense. And obviously it didn't equate to a ton of points, but it's not like it was this crazy low volume offense. Just be super conservative. Like, they attempted to throw the ball a lot. It didn't go very well. And if you think Bryce Young can put forth a better effort this season, I think those targets will be there for Deontay Johnson. And as you know, team wins, not a stat in fantasy football.
Right. I mean, the volume alone is going to make Deontay Johnson valuable. It's what happens late August when we're in the throngs of training camp, puff pieces and everyone talking up like second year bounce back. Bryce Young can't be any worse. There was a reason he was number one overall pick. Like, I don't think Bryce Young, I should have been more vocal about it last year. I liked CJ Stroud, not to the extent that John McKechnie and Mario did when they were previewing these rookies last season. But I was not in on Bryce Young simply because I don't think a quarterback as small as Bryce Young can succeed in the NFL. It's not even talent or personality or anything like that. It's just you look literally watch him walk out in the field like that doesn't look like an NFL quarterback. And he played like he wasn't an NFL quarterback last year. But from a volume perspective, in a slot target capacity, and we know Johnson has thrived with bad quarterbacks before. Steelers fans are well aware of that. If you're getting him in the sixth round, again, I think it's the James Conner comparison for receivers, or you shrug your shoulders and you're fine enough with taking a guy that will give you constant production, even if there is a ceiling cap on him.
All right, let's talk about your team, Joe. The Green Bay Packers, who have been active, to say the least, over these last few days, really on both sides of the ball. Xavier McKinney, bringing him in on a big money 4-year deal. You know, I was talking to one of my buddies in one of my sports chats, who said he thinks this is the biggest defensive signing for the Packers since Charles Woodson. And I think Devondre Campbell's maybe in that mix, but you know, a lot of these guys,
Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith, those would be the other two ones. I agree.
Za'Darius, Preston Smith. You could say Julius Peppers. I think he was more of a name at that point in his career. But the point being, this team is not typically one that goes out and makes those huge splashes in free agency. It feels like they're dormant for like 4 or 5 years, and they'll pop up and grab somebody every now and then. But these are the type of moves that Packers fans have been asking for, right? Especially during the peak Aaron Rodgers years. They're like, let's go all in. Let's go out, spend the money on somebody like McKinney. I thought I was done with Darnell Savage. I thought he was out of my life. He now plays for the Jaguars, which is brutal. I know PFF basically put him at like a league average safety last year. That's fine. I would imagine you might agree with me as far as like where he comes in as a tackler. I feel like anecdotally, nobody missed more tackles last season than Darnell Savage. So I don't really know if you can overstate, you know, how big of an upgrade McKinney is for this defense at a huge position of need. They also brought back Keyshawn Nixon late last night. The kick returner, you know, saw probably more snaps than he should have as a defensive back last season. And then the big one, of course, letting Aaron Jones walk and then bringing in Josh Jacobs. But there was, I actually said that backwards. They brought in Josh Jacobs. We thought those two were together. And then 45 minutes later, Aaron Jones is off the roster. So I will wind you up and let you go on this, because I'm sure you have a lot more thoughts than I do.
Yeah, real quick from the McKinney perspective, because it is one of the bigger deals. I think it's obviously the highest paid safety, at least currently, from a free agent perspective. I was surprised to see the Packers go into that market with as many name value veteran starters available, like Justin Simmons being cut, those kind of guys, to sign the top of the market one, a younger player, but one that I think you're hoping still improves to a dramatic level to outpace that contract. That was surprising to me, and I think it goes to the direction that the Packers don't believe they are Super Bowl contenders just yet, but they're hoping this core grows to that, and McKinney adds a value that this draft class will not be able to do, and that's fine. I would like them to sign a Quandre Diggs or Justin Simmons as well, depending on what that market looks like, to have multiple of those guys. You saw Jonathan Owens, who was the starting safety last year, one of the starting safeties for the Packers, signed with the Bears in a smaller deal yesterday. There's a lot of safeties still on the board, and the Packers have zero of them now with McKinney one. Great. I still think Smith Square, which was Preston Smith and Za'Darius Smith, Gutenkunst's first year as a general manager, were more prominent and impactful free agent signings than what McKinney projects even best case scenario to be. But they haven't had a good safety, not since Charles Woodson, since Nick Collins, which we're talking about almost 15 years now at this point. That's what I'm hoping McKinney can be, but that's as a Packer fan hoping. I don't know if that's the case. The real news from a fantasy perspective was Josh Jacobs signing with the Packers. And that was, I think, the second free agent running back. It was Swift first, then Jacobs kind of shattering Twitter. And then you had Barkley coming afterwards, and we'll, you know, Austin Eckler later on, we'll get to those guys too. For a brief 32 minutes, I think that's what it was, 32 minutes that Rapoport had led us on to believe. I now hate him as much as I hate Schefter. That's not true. It's fine. I'm just teasing. But Rapoport had reported that Aaron Jones was going to be have his contract negotiated to have both Jones and Josh Jacobs. You would think that's weird because the combined salary for those two would have been about $18 million. But if you remember, the Packers were the other team that was interested in trading for Jonathan Taylor before the Colts had ultimately re-signed him. And that was going to be Jonathan Taylor and Aaron Jones. So, like, they have committed to this idea of having two stud running backs before. They gave an offer, third round pick in AJ Dillon, to the Colts, wasn't accepted. But, like, that was the premise to get both those guys. I liked it. I don't like it as much now. From a pure Madden perspective, you're trading a 30-year-old running back who may be a little bit less in the speed department for a 25-year-old running back and Josh Jacobs at the start of the new year. That's the correct choice. And you're taking advantage of a depreciated running back market. I had read Bill Barnwell's article on ESPN. This contract is entirely, even though it's the most money of all these free agent running backs, it's way more comparable to the years of Adrian Peterson, or even when Le'Veon Bell got his big deal from the Jets in the offseason. It only counts for, I think, 4.7% of the total cap relative to Peterson and Bell, which was pushing, I think, 8% for Bell and 11% for Adrian Peterson with the Vikings. Like, this is the right idea, whether it be Barkley or Jacobs or Eckler or any of these better running backs. Doing this now, the quality of running backs we have in free agency makes sense. I think the veteran leadership void, which, again, you can't quantify in Madden, is the part that I'm really concerned as a Packers fan. You're hoping Jordan Love gets to that point. I know, and we've been on teams before, not to the level of professional teams, but you can't force somebody to be a leader, right? Like, that's not how that works. You have to hope that person develops into it or they have those traits naturally. I think Jordan Love does, but you're asking a lot of your second-year starting quarterback to take all of that leadership capacity. There is no Mercedes Lewis. There is no Randall Cobbs anymore. There is no Aaron Jones. Jordan Love is going to be the leader. And to also develop, which you need him to in the second year, you're asking a lot of your star quarterback. That's what you should. That's what a star quarterback does, but you're asking a lot. That's what makes me nervous the most.
And that is what I've heard from most Packers fans who I've talked to, which, as you know, in the state of Wisconsin, there are many. Yes. You know, everybody's like, yeah, I get it. I get the logic, but man, I really loved Aaron Jones. And you know what it reminds me of, Joe, in some ways, is the Bucks, Damian Lillard, Drew Holiday
situation. Oh, it's exact same.
This offseason, right? Where it's like, you know, I think it's a little different because Lillard is just, you know, indisputably a better player. Whereas I think you could argue just for this coming year, you know, would you rather have Aaron Jones or Josh Jacobs? That's a debate. But, you know, the kind of after effects of it where, you know, if somebody had told you, all right, you can have Damian Lillard, but not only does it mean that you won't have Drew Holiday, he's also going to end up on the Boston Celtics. That's the other piece, yeah. Right? That's the other piece of this is that Aaron Jones not only goes to another team, but it's the Minnesota Vikings. You know, I look at this as the Packers, and you alluded to this earlier. They're looking at this as a 2 to 3 year window, as opposed to we're gunning for 2024. Right? That to me is where signing Josh Jacobs to this deal, which includes three team option years, right? I think that's also key. As opposed to prioritizing Aaron Jones for one season, and then you're back in the same boat next offseason. Right?
With a lesser running back class. Like we saw all these dominoes fall. There will be, by default, less running backs available next offseason compared to the star-studded class. So they capitalized on the right timing. It's unfortunate that it comes at the expense of Aaron Jones.
Right, and Aaron Jones is also a year older and – you know, coming, we're saying if we're doing this next season, you know, Aaron Jones is what going to be going into his age 31 year at that season, point. Yeah. And at that point, it's like, he's probably done. Right. So the Packers are getting out in front of this as they've done under Brian Gutekunst. I mean, this is a very Gutekunst type of move. If you look at the things he's done, obviously the Aaron Rodgers situation being first and foremost, he tends to be a little more ruthless, I think, than Packers fans are used to. And in my opinion, I think that's a good thing because like you said, yeah, we expect the Packers to be a playoff team or contend for a playoff spot again. But I think, you know, going all in and trying to build this team and like expecting to go to the Super Bowl next year doesn't make a ton of sense. And I think you're extending your window, you're extending your flexibility with Josh Jacobs, who is 3 years younger than Aaron Jones. I will say I was surprised to discover when I was comparing these two, Joe, Josh Jacobs has like 150 more career carries than Aaron Jones. And obviously you could say, well, yeah, it's because Jones has missed so much time. But still, I mean, is that a concern to you at all, the heavy workload, especially 2 years ago for the Raiders?
Yeah, and it's tough. I will be completely honest. I have been not interested in Josh Jacobs from a fantasy perspective or from a talent perspective relative to like the rest of the RotoWire people. I think I'm lower on him than most. I rarely get into Twitter fights because I just don't have a lot of clout to do so, Nick. But one of the rare Twitter fights that I got in with random people was about Josh Jacobs. And I had mocked the Raiders last year that they didn't even have to offer him a franchise tag because there wasn't going to be a lot of interest. And there was surprisingly a few Raider fans that were upset by that. And I guess it was before his record-setting year, so the year prior to that, that they rescinded the franchise tag, which is crazy. So, like, we had a first-round pick, one of the only of the John Gruden, Mike Mayock era, which looked even good, much less like competent, like what you're excited about, and they chose not to even offer him the franchise tag. To extend the fifth-year option. He goes out, gets the most rushing yards in the single season, 2,000 total yards. He's also a pass catcher, by the way. We'll get to that. And then follows that up by having a disappointing year this year. I think Jacobs is worse by a significant margin than what he did 2 years ago. But he's also significantly better than what we saw last year when you had Aiden O'Connell and Jimmy Garoppolo and other quarterbacks for the Raiders really occupying an offense that Josh McDaniels had torpedoed almost from the start, but certainly came to a head midway through last season. Like there's culture reasons, there are personal reasons why Jacobs might have struggled. And I think he is going to be reinvigorated with the Packers next season. To the point where I'll be really curious to see where his fantasy value lies, not now, but in June, July, and certainly August as drafts ramp up. I assume Barkley now joins McCaffrey and Breece Hall as first-round running backs next year. I wonder if Derrick Henry gets close to that point, if people are a little bit wary about some of these lesser receivers. If Jacobs is not a first-round running back, I think I'll be very interested in his draft value. Like if he's a 25 pick, top 20 pick, that's going to be a really sweet spot because that one cut system, while he might be not as explosive as Aaron Jones, Jacobs is going to really benefit. And I think instead of getting 3.5 yards per carry, which happened last year, he's going to average 4 point or even think even higher than that with the Packers, the way LaFleur is running. Like that player matches the scheme to a T.
Yes.
And that's where the benefit's going to lie. And if he is getting, I would assume more of the volume than Aaron Jones by a significant margin, no matter if they draft somebody or sign somebody else. That's a top 20 fantasy running back. Top 20 fantasy player overall, much less, I think even higher. There's a ceiling to grow for him.
I think there's more of a dependability factor as well.
Yes.
With Josh Jacobs, who has missed time. You know, he missed a few games last year. He's only been a 17 game player once in his career. So I don't want to, go too far down that road, but I think there's probably, I don't know if frustration is the right word because it's not Aaron Jones' fault, but the guy's been available, not available. It kind of felt like it was 50-50 week to week for most of last season. And I think the Packers look at that.
Two seasons now.
Right. Well, and the Packers look at that and say, that's not going to change the older you get. So I think they wanted, maybe prioritizing durability over, game to game upside that I still think is there with Aaron Jones. What do the Packers do behind Josh Jacobs? Are they comfortable going forward with, Emmanuel Wilson, Patrick Taylor? Is there another name who's still out there would make sense? God forbid they bring back AJ Dillon.
Yeah, I don't think AJ Dillon is going to. Like, there was a rumor today that there was multiple teams interested in the Colts, the Cowboys, somebody else. Sure. I would assume that there's going to be at least one team that offers Dillon like 2 year, $4 million. Zach Moss signed with the Bengals, likely to be their 1A to Chase Brown's 1B for 2 years, $5.5 million. If you're the Giants and you already signed Singletary to like a $6 million deal, if you had AJ Dillon for an extra two, that's a pretty good backfield. And maybe it won't replace Barkley. They fuddled that situation so horribly, but there's one of those that makes total sense to me where you do that. So no, I don't think the Packers will sign back AJ Dillon. They have 11 draft picks this year, two second round picks, obviously due to the Aaron Rodgers trade, multiple in like early day three range from a compensatory factor last year. I assume they're going to draft one of those guys. Goody has always been the general manager, has always been interested in the RAS scores, the guys that go crazy. So the Isaac Garrido, who ran the crazy 40-yard dash, that would make sense to me. I wouldn't mind if they kind of bought low on like a J.K. Dobbins coming off an injury and see what he has. If you said Dobbins 1 year for $3 million, that makes total sense to me as well, too. But other guys that are available right now. And I'm looking at Mario Puig's free agent tracker on the RotoWire site. I wouldn't be surprised if Deonta Foreman, who's had success everywhere he goes when he's been forced into a starting spot, or if you're saying they need more of a pass catcher, a guy like Ty Johnson, who also had times being successful, those are minimum level. Maybe you're signing for $2 million, $3 million. That's the backup capacity that Josh Jacobs is going to have. So it will be his backfield plus a rookie and plus maybe a cheaper free agent signing or two. But they don't have a lot of cap space after McKinney. So I could see them just going with the Emmanuel Wilson and draft picks for next season.
Okay, real quickly, let's hit the other side of this, and that's Aaron Jones in Minnesota. Yep. If you need to take a moment to take a deep breath, kind of compose
I grieved yesterday. It's
before,
fine.
Yeah, okay. Well, what do we think about this? I mean, it's interesting to me because, yeah, you hate to see him go to the Vikings, but in a weird roundabout way, it's like, are the Vikings even like the primary threat now to the Packers, where it's like, all right, yeah, you can go to the Vikings. That's all well and good. Go win 7-8 games if you want. You know, go play with Sam Darnold. So there's a little like, we wish you well. We don't like to see you in purple, but I also am not sure that this really moves the needle for Minnesota in terms of what their ceiling is next season. What say you?
Yeah, at two games a year, I'll gladly start Aaron Jones. And it's when they sit against the Packers, if he's healthy for both or even one of them. If you said Aaron Jones plays a full 17-game season, I had just said Josh Jacobs is worth, I think, a top 20, top 25 pick. I think Aaron Jones might be worth more from a fantasy perspective. But the issue is, and we've already illustrated, do you actually think that's going to happen? Aaron Jones has missed significant time the past 2 years due to hamstring injuries. Now, the Packers medical staff has been notoriously like hard on those. You look at Christian Watson and his hamstring stuff, the way they've been diligently not playing those players. Aaron Jones, another good example. Even Jordy Nelson at different variations in his career. They made sure that they weren't going to let those soft tissue injury guys go out after one or two games. They waited the maximum amount of time. Notably, the Packers have fired their entire injury and medical staff this offseason. So I think that might be a change to what the rest of the NFL is doing with those players. We'll see if that makes a difference. I don't believe Aaron Jones stays healthy a full 17 games. In fact, if you're doing over under 12 and a half, I might take the under on that too. The issue is, I think Ty Chandler is just gonzo. Like, he's not a very good player either, who is their only backup after Alexander Mattison was released earlier this offseason. The Vikings made a shrewd move to sign Aaron Jones to a deal that I think makes a lot of fantasy sense, but they're going to have to draft somebody, if only because there's very little depth behind them, behind Aaron Jones, behind Ty Chandler. Right. And I just don't, again, it's a gamble on whether you think Aaron Jones stays healthy. From a best ball perspective, I don't know what his value is, but I'll gladly take it, because I think 12 games, 13 games, you're fine. But if I'm having to rely and start on Aaron Jones at certain points in stake league or places where you don't get a lot of limited roster or limited roster spots, that makes me very, very uneasy.
All right, let's go rapid fire through some of the other big deals, big landing spots from these last couple of days. Derrick Henry winding up with the Baltimore Ravens. Kind of felt like this was coming for a while. It seemed like an obvious landing spot. You know, Baltimore, as always, in need of a running back, because every year they lose like two guys to a torn ACL. Durability, a huge check mark in Derrick Henry's favor, although obviously getting up there in age. This just feels so perfect. Like Derrick Henry in a Ravens uniform, bowling over guys, you know, standing there next to Lamar Jackson. It's going to be awesome. I hope it works out for them. What does this mean for fantasy? Getting him out of Tennessee, getting him to this Baltimore system.
Yeah, last podcast we had said, what's the best landing spots for Saquon Barkley? And I had said the Ravens among my choice. The Eagles, and we'll get to them in a second, great spot too. But once Barkley went to the Eagles, I thought Derrick Henry to the Ravens was like the obvious one for one. He could have wrote that down, took that to the bank at that point, and then signing the contract he did yesterday was great. I think Derrick Henry for this season especially is going to be right up there, if not higher than some of the peak years for the Titans that he had. Like, I'm not saying 27-year-old Derrick Henry at his complete health is going to be better than this iteration what we've seen of Derrick Henry, but that offensive scheme with Lamar Jackson giving him the running holes that he's going to give, I mean, like, average yards per carry, 4.3, 4.2. Like, I'll take the over on that. I don't know how many times he's going to get it, but, like, Henry is going to at least fall forward for three with the space that he has. That is going to make that offense way better than what people thought Odell Beckham was going to make them last season. And I understand Tom Monken, far more of a passing offense than we had in previous years. This is one of the best free agent signings I think we have seen thus far of all these running back landing spots. And Derrick Henry, to me, along with Josh Jacobs, along with Aaron Jones, easily has fantasy value risen by rounds. And I'm excited to see, at least for this season, what he'll be able to do.
Baltimore led the league in total carries last season. And, you know, part of that's having a running quarterback in Lamar Jackson. But right. I think the Keaton Mitchell, Derrick Henry dynamic is, this is like the ultimate thunder and lightning. I don't know if there's ever been two more extremes in a backfield. And yeah, I think the touchdown potential, you know, rises certainly for Derrick Henry. I mean, you think back to like watching him in his down games last year, you just felt bad for the guy. Like I never really watched him. I watched him a ton in the AFC South. And I'm like, I don't really think he's lost that much of a step.
Exactly.
I think he's just being put in horrendous situations. Like those two Texans games, I think one of them, he had like 17 carries for like 9 yards or something. I mean, it was bad. And I know the Ravens have some holes in their offensive line that they have to shore up, but I think you could argue team context wise, this might be the best situation he's been in his entire 100%. Career. I know he's been on a Titans team that was the number one seed, I believe, in the AFC 1 year. So it's not like he's been on these crap teams, but he's never had a quarterback like Lamar Jackson. He's never had coaching like this. He's never had a complete roster around him. You know, in some ways, it's a shame that it's happening this late in his career, but I'm still holding out hope that there's one more, you know, borderline elite Derrick Henry season out there. So where do you think he ultimately settles, you know, in terms of ADP or even like general round? Like where are you willing to take him?
Yeah, I don't have the underdog ADP up right now from a best ball perspective.
Yeah, and that's going to be a little skewed as well. We just don't have enough of a sample.
Sure,
with
sure.
These new landing spots.
So 2022, he had 350 carries for the Titans. Last season, he played every single game, 280 carries. He was banged up, though, at different variations. While he might have made it through or started every game, it's different. And then go back to 19 and 20, which is getting closer to that number one overall Titans team that we're talking about. 303 carries, 378 carries. I think that the max amount of carries Derrick Henry is going to get is closer to that 280 range, if not less. 4.2 yards per carry last season put him at close to 1,200 rushing yards in an offense that you and I both agree was one of the worst in the league when it was Ryan Tannehill and Will Levis as your quarterbacks for the Titans. I think we're pushing close to 4.5 yards per carry, 4.6 yards per carry, which would say he is a 1,300, 1,400-yard rusher. The only difference, and I think this is a positive and negative, there are so many ways in which the Ravens, especially with Lamar Jackson, can score in the red zone that Derrick Henry is the guy that just plunges forward isn't an obvious one-for-one. However, that is what they did with Gus Edwards throughout Edwards' entire career with the Ravens. And Derrick Henry is a much better version of Gus Edwards. So it could just be as simple as saying, hey, the guy that's going to get 4.6 yards per carry and also falls forward in the end zone 10 times a season should be a first-round pick. Like, I think it's entirely possible. And we know they can do some creative stuff with him as a passer in the red zone, things like that. Not at least throwing four touchdowns a game, but I can just easily see some cool Derrick Henry drops back, throws the Lamar Jackson kind of play. That'll happen at least. I need it to happen at least once, if nothing else. So I think Derrick Henry in like the late second round would be one of those. Like if you decide not to take Christian McCaffrey, took one of the receivers instead, I would be fine one tapping Derrick Henry as one of those late second round, early third round picks for this season. Again, not his entire career. We're not doing this from a dynasty thing, but this season he needs to be among the top 35 selections overall.
Tell you right now, his underdog ADP was 54.7. So
let's fire up some of those best balls right now.
Yeah, well, I literally just entered one as we speak to get the ADP up. So if you were to go around, let's say pick, you know, there's actually a gap right now. If you look at the ADP, you know, you have the elites, McCaffrey, Hall, Bijan, Gibbs, all those guys going in round one on average.
I'm taking Henry over Gibbs.
Really?
Yeah, like I this is me saying I think Gibbs needs to fall further as opposed to a pro Derrick Henry call. But I like Jacobs, I like Henry, not Aaron Jones quite yet, but like I like Jacobs and Henry as much, if not more, than Jahmyr Gibbs. So whatever influence you are saying Jahmyr Gibbs needs to be a top 25 overall selection, which is where he was going, I think that's even higher he's been. That's incorrect, because I think the level in which Henry and Jacobs will be involved in their offense is far more than Gibbs. I like Gibbs as a prospect. Dynasty wise, I get it all together. But there's still David Montgomery round, and it's still Amon-Ra St. Brown and Sam Laporta and whatever else the Lions choose to do offensively. Mm-hmm. And they lost Jonah Jackson, their left guard, who was okay, but you know, whatever else. I like Henry and Jacobs as much, if not more, than I like Jahmyr Gibbs right now.
So what I was going to say is ADP wise, you know, if you're saying, you know, second, third round on some of these guys, that would put them in like the Travis Etienne zone, who's almost on his own tier in terms of ADP.
Yep. What are the receivers around that spot? Because that's probably the other – it's a roster build question at this point. Yep. If you're saying they need to go that high. What are the receivers?
So if we're talking – you know, so what range do you want? Like
I'm mid-30s? Saying let's go – yeah, early to mid-30s.
Okay, so starting with around pick 30, we have Drake London, Jalen Waddle, DK Metcalf, Malik Nabers, Devontae Smith, Keenan Allen, Cooper Kupp, T. Higgins.
I think I'm bumping Keenan Allen up, but that Malik Nabers tier and below, I'm putting Jacobs and Derrick Henry above them. So like even Metcalf, I think I'm also putting those two running backs above Metcalf right now.
Okay. All right, let's hit a couple more and then we'll be out of here. Joe Mixon landing with the Houston Texans. We don't love that from a Jags perspective. I actually really like what Houston's been doing. They have lost a few pieces on the defensive side of the ball.
They got Danielle Hunter that'll replace Greenyard, which is nice play.
Yeah, they basically swapped in some guys, swapped out some others, made some additions, got Jeff Okuda as well. That was a defense that had like no names last year and actually ended up being a lot better than we expected. Brought back Dalton Schultz, whatever. Not a huge fan of that. I know Mario didn't love that one. But Mixon, arguably the biggest name of all these guys in terms of fantasy relevant players, found himself, I thought, in a very similar situation as far as what happened with Aaron Jones in Green Bay.
Yeah, and I thought Aaron Jones was going to go back to the Texans. He's from Houston area, so that one made sense to me and was going to be probably the same fantasy values as with the Vikings, provided he stays healthy. No, the Mixon deal is interesting because we had projected, at least I had projected, Mixon was going to be cut last year, and he even tweeted that out that, oh, you guys were wrong last year. You're not going to be wrong this. You're going to be wrong this year too. Well, I mean, technically we were wrong. He didn't get cut. He got traded. From a financial perspective, great move because he's only about $6 million per year. And that's what Devin Singletary got for the Giants. And Mixon at this point of his career is still better than Devin Singletary. And I'm higher in Singletary than most here in the RotoWire offices, at least. But I'm expecting Mixon as one of the true three down backs in the NFL. And I know they have Damian Pierce. They could obviously draft another running back too. I thought Pierce was certainly more of a 1 year wonder and proved it last year. This new regime of coaching does not seem to care for Pierce too much. Mixon is going to be a steady, reliable guy. Now, the one part of it is where Jacobs and the Packers scheme really kind of one-to-one blend. I don't really feel like that's the case for CJ Stroud and Joe Mixon in that offense. Like, the offensive line isn't going to give him as much room, although they should all be healthy now, theoretically, after being injured for almost all of last season. The opportunity for Mixon to at least kind of Ryan Granted as a Packers fan and 3 yards of cloud dust fall forward, that's going to be there. And I think they can easily get 4 yards per carry at times, but there's an upside cap for what Mixon can do from a yardage perspective. And there's other red zone options. The big play ability and the way that offense can strike, whether it be Nico Collins or Tank Dell when he gets healthy, there's going to be less opportunities for Joe Mixon to accumulate total yards and opportunities than some of these other free agent signings. So good landing spot, especially if he had been cut. I don't think he gets to a better place, but I'm there is a cap to it. And I would say he's more like a fifth round, fourth round guy right now.
All right. We're almost out of time, Joe. Anybody else you want to hit? Any teams, any players that you have notes on?
Well, I liked Barkley, obviously going to the Eagles. People are going to overdraft him right now. And I'm wondering if we get to end of August and there's like, Barkley played through X amount of injuries over the past 24 months. Do you really think he stays healthy again? And look what the Eagles done in the backfield. They've used Boston Scott and other players rotating out. Like, will Barkley not? So if there's language that makes Barkley become in that range of Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs, and fall down further in drafts, I'm all in. But if we're saying Barkley is a top 10 pick now because Jalen Hurts opens that offense more, great. I agree. They're just not going to utilize him to the extent the Giants did. They literally can't. When you have A.J. Brown, Dallas Goedert, and Devonta Smith, you can't use a running back the same way the Giants did when they had literally nothing to get to offensively other than Barkley. So I understand the optimism. I like the fit. I love the revenge factor. I'm all in the revenge factor of that stuff. But it doesn't make me as fantasy relevant. I want to ask you the Kelvin Ridley, Gabe Davis saga that we're seeing with Jacksonville. Because I don't know what to make of this signing other than good player going to a team. But the Jags also seem to be interested in Kelvin Ridley. So I have no idea how they pull that off.
Well, I don't sit here and pretend to be an NFL cap expert by any means. I feel like I got a pretty good grasp of like the NBA salary cap after many years. And like my entire brain capacity is dedicated to that. I think the Jags are still very interested in bringing Ridley back. It's currently, 3 p.m. Eastern. And a couple hours from now, we very well may have a decision. There's reason
That's right.
for the Jaguars.
The draft take, yes.
Yes, there's reason for the Jaguars to wait until after 4:01 p.m., as that would mean sending a third rounder as opposed to a second rounder to the Atlanta Falcons by virtue of that Ridley trade. It depends where you look, right? I'm on Jags Twitter a lot. Everybody's thinking he's coming back to Jacksonville. There are other people saying New England's in the mix. There are other people yet saying that a mystery AFC South team may be interested in Ridley. I would imagine that could be the Tennessee Titans, who, of course, have some needs. Yeah, or the Colts at that position. But I think this is probably the best the Jags could do right now. I personally would love for them to find a way to get T. Higgins. The Jags haven't seemed overly interested in that, at least not outwardly. Tough to say what the draft or what the acquisition cost would be for T. Higgins. Can you do a second rounder? Do you have to throw any players back? I have no idea. But his college quarterback was Trevor Lawrence, right? And there's an obvious connection there. And I think he's somebody that would be just a perfect fit. And that type of player just doesn't become available all that often. So I would imagine the Jags are at least looking into that. But I think bringing Ridley back is the path of least resistance. We'll see what the money ends up coming in at. As far as Gabe Davis goes, I compared it on the radio to signing Jordan Clarkson in the NBA, where it's like, all right, okay, yeah, sure. one night he'll give you 27 points and 6 threes off the bench. And then the next two games, he'll go 1 of 10 from the field. It's funny. I heard this on another pod. Somebody said that the Jags just sign players who play well against them. And Gabe Davis coincidentally had the best game of his season against the Jags a couple years ago. Christian Kirk torched the Jags.
Sure.
And they're like, we need to get this guy. He's really good. It's fine. It's totally fine. I just want this team had a window. They had all these assets. Mm. They had everything set up for them. And it hasn't been a total disaster. They're still a competitive team. Anything's going to be better than where they were like 5 years ago. But yeah, it just feels like this isn't where it should be right now. And it's tough to get fired up about bringing in Gabe Davis. Nonetheless, they made some moves on the offensive line. They got a new center. That's huge. I think that was, underratedly one of their biggest issues last year. I don't know that this team got dramatically better, but they've been aggressive. And, I think it's better than just sitting back and trying to run it back with a roster that just wasn't that talented last season. As far as Davis goes, I don't know if we can really talk about his fantasy value until we know if Ridley's signing or not, because that makes a dramatic difference.
Yeah, I have not sold any shares of Trevor Lawrence. I think the people that are talking about him, even outside a top 10 quarterback in the NFL, are just ridiculously wrong. That guy is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. So if it's coaching, if it's offensive line, if it's just muggy weather in Jacksonville, I don't know. There is a reason why he isn't playing to his level, but it's not Trevor Lawrence. Like that is the guy as advertised in my mind. There's no way he performs to the level that he did with Urban Meyer, the worst head coach in possibly NFL history, but certainly over the past three decades, and still had the success. I thought, I know that win-loss didn't happen, but the way he produced, that was confirmation to me that Trevor Lawrence is the guy that we thought he was a couple of years ago coming out of Clemson. The Higgins thing, I hadn't thought about the reunion of sorts. I believe it's a coaching factor. You talk to Mario or John and those guys, they'll say it's the same thing. I don't believe it's a lack of talent at receiver. So I think it's an excess of resources being given to a position that I think at Lawrence in the right scheme elevates everyone, but we haven't seen it quite yet. Christian Kirk is a great receiver.
Yeah.
I think that Evan Engram, it can be a great receiver too. Travis Etienne is a good player, running back, receiver. Otherwise, you have good players. You don't need to sign more. Yeah. So getting Gabe Davis and possibly also resetting Ridley seems just to be a bloated excess of resources invested. But you can do that when Lawrence isn't on his massive deal yet, but he should be. And again, I'm not selling any stock in him. I think once things change, whatever it is that needs to be changed, Lawrence is going to be that guy again.
Fittingly, Joe, as we speak, Mario is tweeting right now about Press Taylor. 8 minutes ago, we had an anti-Press Taylor tweet from the post.
Well, that's an every 8 minute thing anyway. I mean,
if Mario tweets something like that is like gospel to me. All right. Like the fact that he dislikes Press Taylor as much as I do makes me feel good about my own.
Means we're right. That's what I'm saying. Like if he's agreeing, it means we're right with our hatred for the way they're doing things. Yeah.
All right, man, we got to wrap this thing up. We'll be back next Wednesday. We will undoubtedly have more news to talk about. We will have a larger sample in terms of best ball drafts, where some of these guys are going now that they're in new landing spots. Mm. Check us out tomorrow, though. We got John and Mario, speaking of. They'll be doing the show, talking a bunch of best ball, talking NFL draft, doing a ton of free agency talk as well. Alan Soslowski, he'll be on the show on Friday. Make sure you check that out. Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, throughout the offseason. We are putting out episodes, giving you everything you need for your best ball drafts, for whatever you're preparing for, Dynasty League. We got the NFL draft coming up. We'll be doing it all summer. Really looking forward to having everybody following along. Joe, good to talk to you as always, man, and we'll do it next week.
All right, sounds good.